Libya's rebels are said to be inside Colonel Gaddafi's compound in Tripoli. We'll talk live to the Foreign Secretary and hear from this man who spoke to Colonel Gaddafi today.
I was in my car, somebody calls to me, and when I answered, it was Mohammed Gaddafi, the elder son of Gaddafi.
With the BBC News, Peter Donaldson.
There's been intense fighting in the Libyan capital Tripoli as the rebels close in on areas controlled by Colonel Gaddafi's forces. Rebels attacking his headquarters say they've breached one of the compound's outer gates. Latest reports say Gaddafi's supporters inside are no longer putting up any resistance, and opposition fighters have been seen firing into the air in celebration. It's not known if the Libyan leader or members of his family are there. Our correspondent, Rupert Wingfield Hayes, who's with a rebel unit in Tripoli, says taking the compound is a key target.
That, they believe, is the key to bringing an end to this conflict. If they can take the compound and if they can catch or kill Colonel Gaddafi, then they believe that the rest of Libya and the rest of this city will rapidly come under their control. They claim that there are rebels coming in from the east of the city, from the Misrata rebels, and that there are others coming from the south as well.
The head of the World Chess Federation, who's acted as an unofficial envoy for Russia, says he's spoken to Colonel Gaddafi today by telephone. The Libyan leader said he was in the city, was feeling well and energetic, and would fight to the end. NATO said his supporters were fighting a losing battle.
We had some trouble getting through to our correspondents in Tripoli on the programme last night, a combination of phones being down and power being off. Tonight, if anything, it's worse, but we'll do our best and hope to speak to our correspondent in a moment. The focus all day today has been on Colonel Gaddafi's Bab al-Azizia compound in central Tripoli. Bab al-Azizia means splendid gate, and the compound houses Colonel Gaddafi's private quarters, as well as a military barracks which is said to be linked to underground tunnels up to 20 miles long. This was the place that was targeted in a bombing ordered by Ronald Reagan in 1986, after which Colonel Gaddafi commissioned a sculpture depicting a hand crushing a fighter aircraft. This morning, several news agencies reported heavy fighting near the compound. The Arab news channel Arab Al-Arabiya said the rebels had attacked its gates. One rebel said the revolutionaries are trying to get in through the old gate on the western side. If they're successful, the fighting will move inside the compound. Close by, dozens of reporters who are unable to report. Being trapped in a five-star hotel may not be your idea of hell, but journalists confined to the Rixos Hotel might disagree. The hotel is very close to that compound, and the fighting and artillery fire is so severe they're taking cover in the hotel basement, among them the BBC's Matthew Price and his team, stymied by a combination of the violence, the lack of communication, and the loss of electricity. It was at the Rixos Hotel and then at the nearby compound that one of Colonel Gaddafi's sons, Saif, made his surprise appearance. A surprise because 24 hours earlier, a spokeswoman for the International Criminal Court said he'd been detained, according to the first Reuters report. Later, Associated Press quoted the ICC prosecutor as saying Saif Gaddafi had been detained by rebel special forces, although he declined to give the source of the information. Abdul Jalil, who chairs the rebels' National Transitional Council, told Al Jazeera he had information that Saif al-Islam had been captured. He added he's been kept in a secure place under close guard until he's handed over to the judiciary. You'll notice that during the day yesterday, Fadi El Abdallah, who speaks for the court, chose his words very carefully.
We received information that Saif al-Islam, one of the suspects, has been arrested in Libya yesterday. And that's why we are in communication now with the Transitional Council in Libya in order to confirm this information. So first to ensure that he was indeed arrested and to discuss the modalities of the implementation of the request for his arrest and his surrender to the ICC.
The first hint that Saif al-Islam might still be a free man came around 7:30 last night when a pro-Gaddafi TV channel said he'd been freed from rebel detention. Hours later, as you saw and heard, he was the very public face of the Libyan government's defiance. What happened? Well, the ICC says it never announced that Saif al-Islam was in its custody. Britain's International Development Secretary blamed the fog of warfare. This afternoon, NATO confirmed it was still bombing the city of Tripoli, but it wouldn't be drawn on whether it was attacking the compound.
I'm not commenting about present or future operations, but we will continue to imply with our missions, and we will do strikes, conduct strikes, wherever necessary to protect the population in Libya.
It should be said that just after 2 o'clock, Reuters quoted an Al Jazeera reporter as saying NATO was indeed bombing the compound. Al Arabiya TV reported that the first gate to the compound was breached by rebels. And then from an unlikely quarter, the International Chess Federation, some new information about Colonel Gaddafi himself. Kirzan Ilyumzinov, president of the Federation, had visited Libya in June as Russia's unofficial envoy. He said this afternoon he'd received a phone call from Colonel Gaddafi's son, Mohammed, who, later in the conversation, passed the phone to his dad. He told PM how it happened.
Several hours ago, I was in my car, and somebody calls to me, and when I answered, it was Mohammed Gaddafi, the elder son of Gaddafi here, the president of National Olympic Committee. Yesterday I saw him on TV that he was in prison, and I was very surprised. I asked Mohammed, "You okay? Where in Tripoli? Where are you?" And he said, no, I'm okay. I'm Tripoli. And my father wants to say to you that he translated from Arabic into English what his father, Muammar Gaddafi said. He said that he is in Tripoli. He is in Libya. He doesn't want to leave his homeland, and he wants to defend his country. After that, in English, he adds thank you. And after that, Mohammed said to me that it is short conversation because of security. And he said to me that he will call to me later. We talked about 1 minute or 2 minutes, yeah.
Back in London, television pictures showed black smoke spiralling up from Colonel Gaddafi's compound. The impact of tank shell explosions could be heard outside. In the past hour, Reuters reported that rebels had been seen firing into the air in celebration inside the compound. Al Jazeera says Colonel Gaddafi's house is now occupied by rebels. We hope to hear shortly from our correspondent, and we will hear in a few moments live from the Foreign Secretary, William Hague. Our coverage of Libya will continue. We are now joined by the Foreign Secretary, William Hague. Thank you very much for joining us. And I appreciate how busy you are. I wonder if you just indulge us, because we've just managed to make contact with our correspondent, Rana Jawad, who's in Tripoli. You can bring us up to date. What's happening, Rana?
Well, what you're hearing in the background is celebratory gunfire. As soon as people saw these scenes on the television screens, showing rebel forces finally making a breakthrough into Colonel Gaddafi's Bab al-Azizia compound. Everyone has just been firing shots into the air, and the women were singing earlier, you've just missed that, but very much a sense of celebration.
What sort of resistance was there at the compound?
The reports we heard suggested that there was very little resistance, and it's not surprising because just over an hour ago, a very close man, or I should say a man who was once very close to Colonel Gaddafi, one of the three officers that helped bring him to power in 1969, who defected last week, he categorically stated that Colonel Gaddafi no longer has a significant number of brigade troops, and that there were about 3,000 the last time he was in Tripoli, and that most of them had been sent off to the mountains, and that he believed there were no brigade forces at all in the compound. We're not sure exactly who was fighting back. Obviously, there were loyalists in the compound, but whether there were those trained, much feared forces that Colonel Gaddafi and his son have been talking about all these months, it remains unclear at the moment.
Reuters reporting that essentially now the rebels are totally in charge of the compound. Is that, given that the colonel is not there, is that more than symbolic?
It's difficult to say. I have previously said that if they do manage to break into the compound, it is more of a symbolic event rather than anything else. It won't mean that all the fighting will suddenly come to an end, because there are pockets of resistance in some areas of Tripoli where fighting has been taking place. However, it is a significant blow to the regime. You know, up until a few hours ago, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, Colonel Gaddafi's son, was still very defiant, saying, you know, the people are with us, the people love us, and that sort of rhetoric. But for now, it is more symbolic than anything. We'll have to watch events carefully because at the end of the day, Colonel Gaddafi was not in that compound and neither was his son, Saif al-Islam, or any of his other sons.
Rana, I don't know what physical vantage point you have. Can you tell us what you can see? Because we can hear a lot.
Well, I'm in the eastern part of the capital, and this has been an area that's been cordoned off for the past 48 hours by residents here who had armed themselves over the past 5 months. So virtually almost every household here does own some kind of machine gun or AK-47. And
this is people firing into the air, I take it, rather than at each other.
There's no fighting in the street. There was some fighting two streets down from us yesterday, and at the start of the uprising here in Tripoli 48 hours ago. But other than that, there hasn't been much resistance, really.
Well, look, thank you, as ever, Rana Jawad, reporting live from Tripoli. And William Hague, thank you for your patience. Do you think we are seeing the final days of Colonel Gaddafi's regime?
Well, we're in the death throes of this regime, and there's no doubt about that. And I think what we were just hearing about there is symbolically important. You were asking whether it was anything more than symbolic. Nevertheless, it's very important symbolism, I think, to anybody in Libya who still thought that Colonel Gaddafi was really in power, or that the regime had a chance of surviving, to see and hear what is now happening to that compound, I think is an important development in itself. But we've seen over the last 5 months not to place too much value on any single piece of news. It's still a difficult and dangerous situation. There are many, many weapons out there. There are thousands of people who were, until very recently, being paid by Gaddafi in his army or as mercenaries to support the regime, many of whom may still be at large. So I think still some difficult and dangerous days.
How would you characterize Britain's involvement?
Well, we have been involved from the outset, as you know, instrumental in passing the United Nations Security Council resolution in March, and then in initiating military action within hours of that. And so we have been a key player in this all along. But
in recent days, I wonder.
And in recent days, we continue to be a key player, but with our focus, of course, while the NATO operation continues to do whatever is necessary to enforce the UN resolutions, our focus in terms of what we are spending our time on is very much to make sure that we are ready to support stabilization in Libya. We've allocated money for that. Of course, we've sent medical supplies in recent times as well. And on the diplomatic side, moving on to, once we have a greater degree of order and security in Tripoli and elsewhere, how do we go about unfreezing the assets of the Libyan regime, letting the Libyan people start to benefit from the assets built up by the Gaddafi regime? These are questions we're now very heavily focused on.
I want to ask you about some of the details that have been published in the New York Times in recent days about Britain's involvement in the last few days. The paper said the rebels had been given satellite photographs by the British and French military advisers. Did that happen?
Well, I don't think I can go into any details about that. I'm not aware of that happening, by the way. But, of course, NATO implements UN Security Council Resolution 1973. All of our military action has been through NATO, let me stress that. And they have done that to protect the civilian population. I don't think I can go into any more operational details than that.
Well, I wonder whether I can put another New York Times report to you, which, if true, might bump up against Resolution 1973, and some people might argue burst through it. The paper said a senior NATO diplomat and an official, so two sources, told the paper, quote, Britain, France and other nations deployed special forces on the ground inside Libya to help train and arm the rebels.
Well, I can't add to what I've said before about this. The United Nations Security Council Resolution 1973 is very clear that there must be no occupation force, no ground invasion, if you like, of Libya. Now, I've often said in the past that that hasn't precluded us, for instance, from having special forces to rescue people from the Libyan desert, as we did in February. So that doesn't rule out every kind of involvement of that nature. Nevertheless, we have interpreted the resolution correctly, legally, with full moral and international support all along. So there has been no preparation of an occupation force, no ground forces of any significance or scale moving into Libya.
No, but there's quite a gap between being categorical about that and perhaps special forces on the ground in the past few days being instrumental in helping the rebels, but I guess you can't go into that.
Well, I wouldn't comment in anywhere in the world on the operation of British special forces.
Well, we'll move on, shall we? So
I don't think I can enlighten you anything further than saying what I've already said, that I haven't excluded that at times there would be special forces, such as in rescuing people from the desert, which is a publicly known fact.
On what happens to Colonel Gaddafi, David Cameron said way back in February that he must leave. You were a bit more nuanced last month. What's the situation now?
Of course, we don't know where he is at the moment. And
Venezuela?
We don't know. We don't know, and I don't think the National Transitional Council know where he is. The situation is that he is indicted by the International Criminal Court, and what I and the French Foreign Minister said a few weeks ago now is that the ideal is for him to answer for that indictment.
Oh, sure, but
before
does it
the International
to you?
Criminal Court. But what we stressed then is that it is up to the people of Libya, and what happened politically in their country, the settlement that they come to in their country is up to them. And that includes what happens to Colonel Gaddafi. That was the point we were making a few weeks ago. It's the point the Prime Minister also made yesterday, and that has been our consistent position.
How much planning has been done for after Gaddafi?
A great deal of planning has been done. We had a team in Benghazi, who I visited when I was there in June, who gave a report, a British-led team, to the National Transitional Council. They have then taken forward the work in detail about what needs to happen in terms of maintaining essential services, in terms of clearing mines, making sure that policing takes place properly to try to avoid the kind of mass looting that we've seen in other situations where governments have been overthrown. They have done that work. Now I think we will have to, once there is a greater degree of order in Tripoli, we will be supporting them in carrying out that work with money and with advice. Our diplomats and aid workers who are based in Benghazi will, of course, be able to assist them directly with these things.
It won't be another Iraq?
Well, that's why we've done that work.
The
extent of our preparations, the extent of our focus on that now illustrates our determination that it should not be another Iraq. But there is, another key point to make about that, which is that the Libyans themselves are determined about that. The National Transitional Council have been clear all along that what they will form is an interim government, an inclusive government, which then paves the way within 8 months for elections to a national congress. And they do, I think, sincerely mean it to be an inclusive government, including former members of the regime, although clearly not the Gaddafi family themselves. And that, I think, is part of the answer to avoiding another Iraq, as well as the work that we are doing.
William Hague, thank you.
Thank you.
BBC News at 6 o'clock. This is Alice Arnold. Good evening. Rebel fighters in Libya have stormed Colonel Gaddafi's compound in the capital, Tripoli. Hundreds of armed men have been firing their guns into the air, waving rebel flags and defacing or destroying any object bearing the likeness of the Libyan leader. Despite this latest advance, the situation across Tripoli remains fractured, with the rebels and Gaddafi loyalists claiming control of different areas of the city. The whereabouts of the Libyan leader are unknown, although his son Saif has told journalists his father remains in Tripoli with his entire family. Hundreds of rebel fighters in the Libyan capital Tripoli have entered the compound housing Colonel Gaddafi's headquarters. It's unclear whether the Libyan leader is still inside the huge fortified complex at Bab al-Azizia, which has been the scene of fierce fighting throughout the day. Television footage has shown rebel fighters kicking the head of a statue of Colonel Gaddafi and firing into the air in celebration. A flag of independence is reported to have been raised over the Libyan leader's home inside. The compound is one of several flashpoints in the city where forces loyal to Colonel Gaddafi have been trying to hold out against the rebels. Our diplomatic correspondent James Robbins reports on the latest developments in the battle for Tripoli.
For the rebels, taking Colonel Gaddafi's heavily fortified compound near the centre of Tripoli was a huge symbolic prize. Pictures of rebel fighters pulling down his defiant statuary and kicking a gold-coloured cast of the dictator's head will signal to Libya's opposition a turning point, although it's not quite the same as control of all the capital. The battle for Tripoli remains intense. The capital city is home to at least 1.7 million Libyans, about one in every four of the country's population. It's impossible to govern Libya without securing all Tripoli. As long as the battle rages, civilians are still at grave risk. And we've been hearing from a section of the front line, where Karen Graham, a nurse from Dumbarton, is part of a medical team overwhelmed by casualties.
Absolutely horrific. Unfortunately, we're in the residential area and it's been defended. We've got one side of the bridge is pro and one side is anti, so it's like something out of a fairy story. They're just like chucking rocks and everything at each other, and we've got massive like rocket propelled grenades and heavy arms fire, small arms fire. It's just awful.
So what's the bigger picture? How much do we know about who controls which parts of Tripoli? Well, from a variety of credible sources, it seems that large parts of the capital, the majority of Tripoli, is in rebel hands, although it's not necessarily entirely secure, as one of our correspondents who lives in the city, Rana Jawad, explained.
There is fighting taking place. There is some resistance within the capital. However, from what I know and people I've spoken to, some of the largest districts and most populous ones in Tripoli are in opposition control. They're manned by local residents who set up checkpoints early on. I'm in the eastern part of the city, and that's the case where I am as well.
But even where the rebels seem to have the upper hand in Tripoli, Gaddafi forces are sometimes able to hit back, particularly by infiltrating individual snipers positioned on rooftops or shooting from windows, as this resident, Otman, made clear.
In my area, there was a sniper from the Gaddafi's forces trying to take out the rebels over there. It took them almost 2 hours to find his place, and thank God he didn't hit or shoot anyone.
But the battle for Tripoli is not yet over, which means that the rebels cannot yet safely move their headquarters from the eastern city of Benghazi and start rebuilding their country on new foundations.
The breaching of Colonel Gaddafi's compound comes at the end of another day of bitter fighting in the Libyan capital. Our correspondent, Rupert Wingfield Hayes, is in Tripoli and has spent the day with rebel fighters.
So we're back again with the Jadu Brigade. We're outside their new base on the western side of Tripoli, and you can hear they're forming up here, shouting, chanting, God is great. There's a convoy of about 50 or 60 vehicles about to head out. They say this is a coordinated attack on three sides this morning into the centre of Tripoli.
Spirits here are high. There is real hope now that these are the final hours of the Gaddafi regime. In western Tripoli, more and more neighbourhoods are now flying the rebel flag. Local militias have taken control of the streets and set up roadblocks to fend off attack by Gaddafi loyalists. At one checkpoint, we met this British woman, Patricia Costello, who was out in her car for the first time in weeks.
It's just great to get out of the house after so long, you know. I basically locked myself up in the house, and I've been, like, under self-imposed house arrest for 6 months.
It has been a long, hard and bloody road for the rebels. They are now desperate for this conflict to be over.
The International Red Cross says the fighting in Tripoli has led to an urgent need for medical supplies and additional staff. Robin Wado is part of a delegation distributing medical and surgical kits to some of the city's main hospitals. He outlined the problems they're facing.
It's not very easy to get around because there are checkpoints that have been created by either side to control who comes in and out of certain areas. That's one of the problems is the staff. The other one is the medical materials, which are being used to a much greater extent than usual.
As news of developments in Tripoli reached the eastern rebel stronghold of Benghazi, opponents of Colonel Gaddafi have been celebrating what they believe to be the imminent end of his regime. The rebels who've come together to try to oust Libya's leader are from many different factions. Our correspondent Paul Wood is in Benghazi.
People have taken to the streets of Benghazi, celebrating a victory they now believe is within their grasp. The rebels are students, businessmen, teachers, most holding a gun for the first time. They rose up with no outside help, and they would have been crushed but for NATO's help. Now they are recognised by many as Libya's legitimate government. But the rebels' National Transitional Council is a mix of factions with little more in common than dislike of Colonel Gaddafi. It's an uneasy coalition between the east and the west of the country, Islamist and secular, former members of the regime and long-standing exiles. There are also tensions between the military and the political leadership. The politicians are worried that there will be revenge killings of Gaddafi loyalists. That would risk losing the support of the NATO countries who got them this far. It would undermine the legitimacy of the new government as well. There can be no bloodbath in Tripoli. So far, no single charismatic political personality has emerged on the rebel side, the kind of figure who could force dissident elements of the militias into line and heal the divisions in the country. But then again, after more than four decades of Colonel Gaddafi's rule, Libyans may feel another strongman is exactly what they don't need.
NATO has said it will continue to bomb Colonel Gaddafi's forces if they keep fighting. A spokesman for the alliance's military operation in Libya said its forces hadn't been providing close air support to the rebels in Tripoli, but would strike at targets which threaten civilians. Our correspondent Chris Morris was at the NATO news conference in Brussels.
NATO says there is now an irreversible momentum towards the end of Colonel Gaddafi's rule in Libya. The fighting may not be over, but the last few days has seen a decisive shift. NATO ambassadors meeting this afternoon agreed that alliance operations will continue for as long as necessary to get the job done. The alliance denies that it's been coordinating the rebel offensive on Tripoli, but it admits that it has eyes and ears on the ground. In other words, intelligence officers and special forces from allied countries who are advising rebel commanders on strategy and helping to pinpoint military targets for NATO aircraft. But the NATO spokesman, Colonel Roland Lavoie, said the focus remains on its mandate to protect civilians.
We do not target individuals, and Gaddafi is not a target from NATO. Of course, we do target command and control facilities. So if Gaddafi is located in a facility that commands and controls attacks, these are legitimate targets, and we will strike.
But NATO is sensitive to suggestions that it's become, in effect, the aerial wing of the rebel movement. For political reasons, it needs to maintain a fig leaf of impartiality, citing the mandate to protect civilians again and again. But planning has also started for a future post-Gaddafi Libya. NATO says that while the United Nations and the countries in the Libya contact group must take the lead in helping a new Libyan government, the alliance is willing to play a supporting role. But that role will not, it insists, include putting any NATO troops on the ground.
A spokesman for the rebel National Transitional Council said it believed Colonel Gaddafi was either still in or near Tripoli. His son, Saif al-Islam, who'd earlier been reported captured by rebels but appeared a free man in Tripoli this morning, told journalists his father was safe in the capital. The Pentagon said it believed he'd not left the country. British intelligence services have been playing their part in trying to track him down, as our security correspondent Gordon Carrera explains.
As fierce fighting raged at the compound, there was speculation that this might have been because Colonel Gaddafi was making his last stand inside. There had been talk that he might be hiding underground, perhaps in tunnels and hideouts beneath the compound. But so far, the Libyan leader has continued to prove as elusive as he has been over the last 5 months. There had been an expectation among some Western officials that the Libyan leader might make his last stand in his hometown of Sirte, but the indications are that he most likely remains somewhere in Tripoli. Officials in London say they do not know exactly where he is, and MI6 will be using its contacts and agents on the ground to try to find him, whilst the eavesdropping centre at GCHQ will be trying to intercept any communications. NATO surveillance planes will also be looking for any signs of escape across the desert. But Colonel Gaddafi has been hunted for months now and has proved adept at evading detection and the airstrikes which appear to have been targeting him. What no one can be sure about is what will happen when or if he's found. Will the hunt end as it did with Saddam Hussein after 8 months on the run, with the former leader emerging from a hole in the ground with his hands held up? Or will Colonel Gaddafi choose to avoid the humiliation of a trial and end his own life, as Hitler did in his bunker, with enemy troops closing in around him?
The European Union is preparing to unfreeze Libya's assets if the United Nations gives approval. The EU's foreign policy chief, Lady Ashton, said Libya was a rich country and the aim was to get its economy moving again if the National Transitional Council took control. Bahrain and Nigeria have become the latest countries to announce that they consider the council to be the legitimate representative of the people of Libya. Here, the Foreign Secretary, William Hague, said the UK would be involved in wide-scale reconstruction in Libya and that a British team had already done a significant amount of planning.
In terms of maintaining essential services, in terms of clearing mines, making sure that policing takes place properly to try to avoid the kind of mass looting that we've seen in other situations where governments have been overthrown. They have done that work. Now I think we will have to, once there is a greater degree of order in Tripoli, we will be supporting them in carrying out that work with money and with advice, our diplomats and aid workers who are based in Benghazi.
And you can see the latest information we have on the progress of the rebels in Tripoli and which parts of the capital they control on a map on the BBC News website, together with many more details.